Hey, folks, welcome back to the DC3Cast. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is Zach. Vince is dead. He'll be back next week. We got three books to talk about. And the first one is the second installment of the Superman Superstars series. That is what it's called, right? I always feel like I'm getting it wrong.
Yeah, it is that. I think you're right. But it is also the first chapter of the something something Brainiac.
House of Brainiac?
House of Brainiac, yeah.
I was getting that confused with House of Dracula, House of Frankenstein, two horror anthology movies from the late 40s that I greatly enjoy. But no, I think it's actually House of Brainiac. So this first installment is written by Joshua Williamson, illustrated by Rafa Sandoval. And we have been talking about this for a while. When was Brainiac first teased as a big villain in the Dawn of DC? Was that all the way back in, was that the end of Dark Crisis?
There's absolutely no way of knowing, and I feel like the only person who could know is Vince, because he's been talking about this like for as long as I can remember. to the farthest edges of my memory, Vince has been talking about Brainiac showing up in the Superman books. I think that he was like maybe teased in one of those Dawn of DC like timeline things that were coming out. Like there was a little hint of Brainiac in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And I really don't remember exactly when it started, but it feels like forever.
It really does. But we're finally here. And the issue begins with a sort of Lois Lane POV. And this very much felt to me like the beginning of the musical Hairspray, Good Morning Baltimore. It's like Good Morning Metropolis, where they were just like going through and showing us what every character is doing and kind of waving to them to catch us all up. And to be honest, I didn't hate that part. I think it was kind of interesting to view in one sort of sitting how much stuff actually is happening in the Superman books. Like, I think sometimes we don't realize how many moving parts are really happening within these titles right now. But we got just about every member of the Superman family, save Power Girl and Jonathan Kent, in these first few pages. Did any of the characters that were showing up there surprise you or interest you?
Not necessarily like surprise. Maybe I do think the exclusions of John and Power Girl were kind of weird. I don't really know like what John's status is right now in the comics. Well, actually,
I think it's from what I gathered, these are just the people who were in Metropolis at this time.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm guessing they're just not in the city for whatever reason.
Yeah. But no, showing up with I guess like the Steel and Lana Lang inclusion was the most interesting to me, because one, I didn't know that they like had gotten engaged. And I also guess I didn't realize that Lana had the Superwoman powers like permanently again.
I knew that, but I forget how I knew that.
Yeah. Maybe it must've been in that Steelworks series, I assume.
Yes.
But I didn't read all of that. So, but that was cool. And then, yeah, like, you know, there's all of the like inclusions of the different villains who have been showing up in the Williamson run, you know, Metallo, Parasite Livewire, yeah. You're right. Like there has been, I've not kept up religiously with the Williamson run and even less so the Philip Kennedy Johnson Action Comics stuff, but I've dipped in enough to be familiar with all of the important characters and cast members right now. And it's nice to see like a very vivid and full Superman status quo right now.
Yeah, I wonder if I would feel more excited about it if there wasn't just two books that had to squeeze in all these characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't really know what that third or fourth book would really look like.
One would be called Superman Man of Steel, and the other one would be called Superman Adventures of Superman. Yeah. And the Man of Steel one would have to be Steel.
Yes, of course.
Do all that stuff in there. And Adventures of Superman would probably be
They should make that one Adventures of Supermen, and it's just
Yes,
like
Adventures of Superman. Yes,
it's Con
yes.
Keenan and John Kent and Connor
And
Kent and
Connor. There it is. It writes itself. DC
And Man of
fire
Steel
us.
could yeah Man of Steel could co-star Lana for sure, since she's
It
engaged
would, yeah,
now,
I
you
just
know.
imagine it being like the Steel family, basically like Natasha's in there, do all the steel work stuff in there, John and Lana.
I really wish we were getting more of this stuff because it is fun when we're seeing it. Like I do appreciate this stuff. But that stuff is relatively short-lived in the story because then we get this Brainiac invasion.
Oh,
And you know,
one last thought I
oh
had before we
sure.
move on. You know how like in the Triangle era when there was a fifth Wednesday, they would do Superman Man of Tomorrow? That could be the, I guess, aborted storyline that Philip Kennedy Johnson was doing with the Superman family of the future.
Oh, fuck yeah.
We could
Okay,
like
I'm in.
touch in on them every
Yeah.
time.
All right, for real,
Gosh.
DC, give us a call. We got some time on our hands, but we can make this happen. This is good shit. But yeah, I think that all that works pretty well. And then we get to this Brainiac invasion, which is a I hate that this has been my note so much. And I'm struggling with even saying this because I don't want this to be the thing I say about superhero comics anymore because I think it's a reductive take and I think it's not really helpful. But I'm just going to come out and say it because I can't think of what else to say. Haven't we seen this exact story 400 times now? Like,
Surely,
doesn't
I
this
think
feel
the
so
invasion
familiar?
of Zarnians is the most unique thing about it, but like this feels like every Brainiac story ever, absolutely.
And it starts off, like I said, that intro section really felt different, and it felt like, oh wow, Metropolis is something so different today than it was a year ago. I'm glad all these characters are around, blah blah blah. And then as soon as the invasion starts, it's like, oh, I have read this story so many times before. And even
Well,
the
it
invasion,
sucks all the life out of like what has been a pretty fun, 8 pages or so.
yes.
It's kind of like a jarring tonal shift too.
And I'm sure that's part of the idea that it's supposed to be doing that, but it just I want more fun in my comics. So that's my first critique of it. But also, like, even the Zarnian invasion, like if you take that race out of it, haven't we seen this exact thing 1,000 times?
Well,
It's just I don't know. I don't know if this is just my just Mal the malaise that is there for me with superhero comics right now, or if this is really as sort of expected as it seems to me.
I think it's probably both, honestly.
Yeah, that's probably true.
There's some interesting wrinkles in this issue. So, whatever's going on with, for some reason we can't know why this is Lois's special day yet. That's like dangled and teased. The reveal that the Lex AI that's been around since the start of the Williamson run, that's actually a Brainiac, Brainiac infiltrating. And then the bit at the end with all the different Brainiacs, one of which, I was especially excited to see.
Well, tell the listeners which one.
It's the Futures End Convergence Brainiac.
Yes, it is. Also, we should note that that is absolutely an homage to Justice League number one, which DC cannot go 1 month without doing an homage to
Oh,
it.
you're right. Oh
It's
man.
everywhere. It's everywhere. But and we'll talk about more JLI stuff in a little while. But yeah, I mean, all the other Brainiacs, I mean, that is cool, I suppose. But I'll also say that I don't think there's been enough. I don't know if it's work is the wrong word for it, but like, if this was Luthor's, and we saw Lex and Alexander from the Death of Superman era, and we saw the Luthor from Earth 3. Like we have multiple stories with different with all those Lexes. Aside from Convergence Brainiac, do you have like any real thoughts on any other Brainiacs?
No, I'm sure like one of these in here is like probably the one from like the 2000s that I was like so prominent. One of them, I guess this main one still looks like the one from like the Geoff Johns, Gary Frank series. He has like the same outfit on, kind
Yeah.
of. The one that's like kind of directly behind him, like the top of the diamond, he has that like pink jumpsuit on. He kind of seems like the Super Friends one, kind of. But like the way Sandoval draws them, they all look so like homogenous in a way. I don't
Yeah,
know.
yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I agree. It's not quite, it doesn't have quite the same effect. I did just remember that I think one of the books that weirdly enough set up some of this Brainiac stuff was that Iron, no, Hardware and Icon,
The
series in
Milestone
the mile
series?
in the hot, yeah,
Really?
yeah, because it shows Brainiac in that universe, like setting up some like multiversal stuff.
Wow. I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, I only remember it from flipping through, and that was, probably close to a year ago, when that was happening. So,
Yeah.
but yeah, I do recall that.
Yeah. You know, I want to like Brainiac stories because I think Brainiac 5 is a really interesting character, and Vril Dox is a very interesting character. Like, there are interesting Brainiac derivations that are cool, but I just find that most Brainiac stories all kind of feel the same to me, and this sort of feels the same to me too.
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah,
What did you think of Sandoval's art besides the sort of homogeneity of these Brainiacs?
his Superman is really good, but I didn't actually really like it that much at the beginning of Dawn of DC on Action. I there's something about it that's just a little too it's like technically good, but it feels so it lacks a dynamism that I just can't like put my finger on it, because it's not like other it's not like posed necessarily, but it is kind of in a way. I don't know. It all feels static, even though it looks like it should be dynamic. I can't quite figure out how I feel about it.
Well, so it's really funny you say that because there's a panel, and I love the scene. It's when Lois is showing up with Jimmy and his girlfriend to do yoga, and they ask where Clark is, and they're talking about his own morning workout, and it's him like flying around, and he flies through a soccer stadium, and he gives a kid a high five, and then he says, "Wow, you're strong, son," and he's kind of shaking his hand out like the high five hurt him, which is a classic dad joke, and it's such a thing Superman would do all the time, right? And but the way that Sandoval draws the him shaking his hand out, it looks like the least natural thing you've ever seen. It's a very, very strange panel, and I think there's a lot of panels in here that I know what Sandoval's going for, but he doesn't quite nail it in terms of what he's trying to do. And when he doesn't nail it, it does look like a snapshot. Like there's the scene where Superman is flying over the flying over Metropolis, and I guess he's supposed to be freezing them with his breath, freezing the Brainiacs, but you don't like he's talking in this scene, so it doesn't look like it's coming out of his mouth. It just looks like he's kind of throwing water or a white substance that's more viscous than water that I'm not going to name in the podcast because I'm trying to be better about this stuff. It's a very strange panel. And there's a couple of instances like that throughout the book where I don't think they're bad. I just think that they're very strangely positioned.
Yeah, it's like I'd have to go back and compare it to like when Sandoval was working on Green Lantern and stuff, but it almost feels like a case where like an artist has like gotten so good that it's almost become technical at this point. You know, it's lost some of its
Yes.
fluidity.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it.
Because I do think that he, as an artist, has gotten better, like strong. His work is so much more detailed, and it's also maybe like a combination of the colors here, from Alejandro Sanchez. It's all just like very well done, but it almost has like a sterility to it in some ways that loses some of the charm that I feel like initially drew me to Sandoval's work.
Well, I will say, like Clark showing up looking like a dork to do yoga, that's the good Sandoval, right? That's that is him embracing the sort of goofiness of comics. And you talk about the jarring nature of the sort of transition when the invasion starts, and there's three panels in a row that are Clark and Lois, and the first one, they both look happy. The second one, Lois looks happy, but Clark looks distracted. And the third one, they both look, they're both aware of the danger that's happening. And I think in that moment, Sandoval does a really good job of shifting the tone of the story from the happy, carefree nature of the first eight pages to what we get next. And when he's doing that stuff, it really does work. But I think it's maybe more the action stuff that isn't working so much for me. Not so much the character moments. But this is the start of something that I can get behind. I don't know if it needs to be as big as it's going to be. Like, this is going on for months
Yeah,
across two books and tie-ins.
I think it's like a six issue main, like it's 3 issues of action and 3 issues of Superman, I'm pretty sure.
Plus, there's tie-ins in Green Lantern and Power Girl and maybe one other book too. It's a lot, but that's okay. It could be good. I'm not writing this off just yet. Yeah. Anything else to say about it?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Well, let's move over to our second title of the week, which is, we're just talking about the backup here, the backup for Green Lantern number 10, which is a House of Brainiac tie-in. But the reason we're reading it is because it's written by Jeremy Adams, illustrated by Kevin Maguire, which is the reason that we're reading it, because it is Maguire doing a Guy Gardner story. And it is much like the Blue Beetle story that we read recently, which was very JLI heavy and very Kevin Maguire, very Keith Giffen influenced. This feels similarly JLI focused and Giffen influenced because of the Lobo stuff.
Lobo, and not only that, like Booster Gold
Yep.
has a has an appearance.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't realize, or I had forgotten, that that Adams was writing this as well. And I'm very glad he is, for one specific reason. And it is that he got to bring back Wham,
Yep.
from his Flash run. And like, I love when creators get to do this kind of thing, you know?
We got to bring back a bunch of stuff in this. Like, there's a lot packed into this.
But like specifically, that was like a, you know, his creation with, you know, the wrestling across the multiverse and that big purple guy. And the fin head guy, and it's such a like ingenious way to bring in this fake Lobo character, or seemingly fake Lobo character. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to, I mean, I think Adams is a very funny writer in general. He does a good job working humor in. And there's a lot of like good 80s pro wrestling jokes in here. Like, there's the theme song for the one guy is, "I am a real Galaxian, keeping it tight for every fan," which is melodically the same thing as Hulk Hogan's old theme music, "I am a real American, fight for the rights of every man." So that's a funny little bit. And the one guy is clearly just the Macho Man Randy Savage, but as an alien. All that stuff is very fun. And I think Adams has a good grip on what the story is supposed to be. Like, that's one of my issues with both the Jessica Cruz and Kyle Rayner backups that we got before this, which is that they clearly were trying to set up future stories, but didn't really have a point for what that story was. Does that make sense? Like, each of them was there to remind you that these characters are going to be important down the road, but they weren't really doing anything to tell you an engaging story in the backup. It was more of like, hey, remember these characters? It's cool to see them. And so I like the fact that this actually is a story. And part of that maybe because it's going to have a couple of issues, it's going to have more room to breathe than those other stories had. But yeah, what did you think of the actual story?
I thought it was good. I feel like it was kind of obvious that maybe this wasn't really Lobo.
Yes.
But I like that how that is hinted at by the title. That is it also itself just kind of a joke, the guy's bogus Lobo adventure. I thought that was like really smart and just kind of a nice subversion of expectations a little bit. And I just like Guy and Lobo together. I like Lobo. I think I have a big soft spot for Lobo, actually.
I do not. That's very interesting.
Yeah, I think I do. I don't know when it started. I think it's like a mix of like really enjoying him in 52, but then also like kind of unironically liking stupid sexy Lobo.
I forgot you like stupid sexy logo.
Yeah,
Lobo.
so so yeah, so I like this a lot. And I like Maguire's art. Yeah, I don't know. This just like works for me on pretty much every level.
That's great. I'm
Yeah.
glad you
What
enjoy
about
it so much.
you?
I thought it was okay. I am not a big Lobo guy, but I like what Adams does here in terms of just setting up the overall shape of the story while expanding it in every direction. So, we get the wrestling stuff and that's fun. We get the booster stuff and that's fun. We get the Space Dolphins from 52 back, and that's really fun. But it's never gonna do what it's doing for you for me just because I'm not the biggest Lobo guy. Although to be fair, we haven't really seen Lobo yet, so maybe I'll enjoy this more because we're not gonna get the real Lobo. I don't know.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I don't actually know. I guess Lobo will show up in the main series, or maybe he'll show up in this too. Maybe that will like lead into. Yeah, I don't know how the mechanics of all of this are going to work.
Do you think that the Space Dolphin stuff is going to be more than just like a throwaway joke?
Maybe. I don't know. I really don't know.
That was the question that I had when reading it. It was just like, is this just a nice little goof for us for right now, or is this going to be something that we're going to be seeing have more import throughout this little mini story? I really don't care, honestly. I think either one would be fine. I'm just curious as to sort of what the ambition for it is, because that is something that hasn't really been touched, has it? That you can remember since 52?
No, I don't think so. I can't remember it ever being used
I want to say it
again.
was, now that I'm saying this though. Was it mentioned in the Lobo and what is his daughter's name? Crush series?
Crush, maybe.
I kind of feel like they mentioned something about his like sp his religious era or something like that.
Yeah, probably. I'm sure it's been referenced a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to our final book of the week, Suicide Squad Dream Team Number 2, written by Nicole Maines, illustrated by Eddie Barrows. So, Zach, tell our listeners what you told me before the show about how you were approaching this.
Yeah, well, so you guys talked about the first issue while I was in Japan. And so I hadn't read it, and I didn't really like want to go back and read it again, so I chose to just jump in at issue two and see if I could understand what was going on and enjoy the issue, and I could, and I did for the most part. As much as I can enjoy Amanda Waller
Waller
story
story,
at this point, yeah.
So it's fascinating that you read it that way because I read issue one, less than a month ago, or about a month ago, probably. And then I read issue two, and I felt I had to check the cover twice that this wasn't issue three, and I didn't miss an issue in between the two.
Interesting.
Because not that I couldn't follow the stuff, it wasn't that anything was so complicated that I was like, whoa, 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 what's happening here? It's just that it felt like the first issue kind of wrapped itself up in one place, and this issue seemingly started in a totally different spot that didn't so much feel like being dropped in the middle of a story, like in media res, but just it felt like a continuation of something else. And so I really was sort of jarred by the beginning of the story for that reason. Once it got going, it was a little bit better for me, but it still felt like, I don't know, a little bit, I guess disconnected from the first issue is what I want to say. But on the same token, you had mentioned before that you don't think first issues matter. And in some ways, like the Waller Dreamer argument that happens in this issue kind of happened in the first issue too. Like, I don't think you missed that much. It just, if you read the first one, I think it did feel a little bit disjointed.
Okay, that makes sense.
One of the reasons we wanted to talk about this book when we were talking about it off air last week is because you're an Eddie Barrows fan, as am I. What did you think of Eddie Barrows' work here?
I thought that the Barrows art on this was really good. I think this is good, Eddie Barrows. I feel like he had a lot of cool things to work with. I thought that the layouts in the dream sequence were pretty interesting. Even though it was like really just two people talking, the way that the panels kind of like flowed into each other, I enjoyed that. So, yeah, I liked all of that.
Yeah, I think that I don't know if it's wholly based on this, but part of why I think I enjoyed this, I'm enjoying this Sandoval art, not Sandoval, my goodness, I'm still back on the old book. This Barrows art more than others is because he is being inked by Iber Ferreira. And I think that combination really works for him. Some of the
Oh
Barrows stuff
yeah,
I don't like as
that
much.
pairing is always good, yeah, I think.
And Adriana Lucas works well with them as well. So I think that this the book looks really cohesive and really interesting. There's one specific moment where Bizarro is choking out Dreamer, where just like the combination of the way that the panels are laid out and the way that the color and shadow is working on it, it's a really sort of gruesome is too strong of a word, but it's a very like affecting jarring scene. And I think that when Barrows is doing his best work, you get stuff that really does sort of walk that line of horror, or at least that line of like just real danger being present in his work. And I thought you got that here pretty well. And I do agree with the dream sequences. Like, I was almost reminded, do you remember the New 52 Swamp Thing series by Yannick Paquette and Scott Snyder? At the first, I think Yannick Paquette did the first arc or two of that book. In that book, there would be these pages that were indomitable, terrible to read, where it would be just Swamp Thing just monologuing for like two whole. It was like a double page spread of monologue. But Paquette did a really good job of making those panels look interesting, even though they were drowning in words. And this is not as wordy, but the dream sequence layouts kind of reminded me of Paquette's layouts in that series.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Yes.
Anything else to say about this book?
No, I again like I just like I well number one, I did not realize that this is only a four issue series.
I don't think it was announced that way.
Yeah,
I think that
I
that's a
just
new
noticed that on
revelation.
the cover. But yeah, like, I know that this is important to like whatever absolute power is going to be, but man, I just have a, I'm struggling to care.
Well, Vince and I talked about this. We talked about issue number one, where we felt like there was there's a real improvement to Nicole Maines's writing in this series. This feels like the most maybe complete work that she has written so far. And we feel like the Suicide Squad is the first time in a while that certain characters aren't there, and it is kind of a more interesting it's a more interesting Suicide Squad that we've gotten in a while. But all of the Dreamer stuff has all been like these one shots and these anthology stories. And here was a book where it seemed like it was going to be an ongoing for the character, and nope, just four issues. So it's a little bit frustrating that it's a that it's just a short mini series. But yeah. Also, fuck Waller. I'm so tired of the character.
Yeah, same.
Anyway, Vince is not here to tell us what comes out next week, and so that falls to me, I guess. I just got to open up a folder here. It's not a big deal. Vince makes it into a big deal every single week when we try and talk about this, but it's not a big deal. Coming out next week, we have Batman Offworld number 4, Batman Superman World's Finest number 26, Catwoman 64, Green Lantern War Journal number 8, Jay Garrick the Flash number 6. John Constantine Hellblazer Dead in America number 4, Nightwing number 113, which is the Legacy 300 issue, Superman 13, Titans 10, and Wonder Woman 8. So we'll be talking about Nightwing and something else. We'll find out what that something else is next week. Until then, go to dc3cast.com for more information. I'll talk to you soon. Bye. So comics, huh?
They're still comics.